Welcome once again to our program, Interpreting the Bible Through the Ages. We've been dealing with the quest for the historical Jesus, and we're coming to the end of the first quest, and we've gone through modernism and the new theology in interpreting the Bible. And what our guest is going to do, Ron Eldred, who was our teacher at John Paul II Catholic High for Bible and apologetics and history, he's going to summarize for us sort of coming to the end of this first section on what has been known in church history as modernism and the new theology. I'm your host today, as usual, Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus at St. Patrick Catholic Church here at 19th and Poplar, where the shamrock intersects the streets. Ron, welcome once again. And before going to another topic, could you give us a summary of modernist beliefs, because modernism played such an important part in recent church history?
Well, as you said in your introductory remarks there, that we've looked at modernism. We looked at people like Loisy and Tyrrell and some of their ideas about interpreting the Bible. And then we looked at the new theology, or in French, the nouvelle theology. And there we were talking about people like Henri de Lubac and Chenu and von Balthasar and many others. And there's a lot of people who connect the two. In fact, the traditionalists in the church, especially the extreme traditionalists, tend to really connect them very closely.
Modernism and the new theology.
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, some of the most extreme traditionalists, such as members of the Society of St. Pius X, and then some of the Sede Vacantist organizations who even go more extreme than the Society of St. Pius X.
And say a word about Sede Vacantist.
Well, that just simply means that they believe that the Vatican Council, too, was not a legitimate or a valid council, because they think that it split away from the historical tradition of the church on many, many issues, liturgical, theological, and what have you. And they also believe that all the popes since Vatican Council II, including Pope John the 23rd, Paul the VI, John Paul II, and even Benedict the 16th, are really not valid popes because they supported this invalid
council. That's about as far extreme
that's
as
about
you
as
can
far
go
extreme
on
as
the traditionalists.
Yes, and some of these traditionalists, these extreme traditionalists, have even elected their own popes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, in fact, there's several of them around the world claiming to be popes.
Oh, really?
Now, the Society of St. Pius X hasn't gone nearly that far.
Isn't Benedict XVI still trying to negotiate with them?
Yes, they're trying to reconcile. And there have been elements, especially in South America, for example, Los Campos or something like that, have actually come back into the Catholic Church. But the main body, for the most part, of the society has not yet done so.
Okay.
Even though the Pope did rescind the excommunication of four of their bishops here not too long ago.
As a gesture of goodwill,
which caused, of course, an international furor, especially after Bishop Williamson said something about the Holocaust never happened or something like that.
I think the Pope even went out of his way to almost apologize, to say at the time he did that, he had no idea that the Bishop had made that kind of awful comment.
Well, some of these more extreme traditionalists, they tend to link the modernists with the new theologians. And those new theologians would include, of course, our past two popes. And I think they're entirely wrong, and at some point we'll analyze that. But
sure.
They're just definitely wrong. Now, you asked me to give a kind of a summary of modernism, and so the best summary that I have come across is found in an article entitled Modernism, Yesterday and Today. And it's written by a Father John F. McCarthy. He's a leading Orthodox theologian and scripture scholar in the country. He's also a parish priest, I think somewhere in Minnesota, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
But To begin, he defines modernism in the words of Rudolf Bultmann, whom we haven't looked at yet. We are going to spend quite a bit of time with, at least three sessions, as, quote, the belief that the outlook of fully modern man has been irrevocably reformed by modern empirical science and technology to the extent that fully modern man can no longer look at life and religion in the way that primitive mankind did, end of quote. Father McCarthy goes on to say, and he was quoting Bultmann there a while ago, nice, this is quoting Father McCarthy, quote, in the specific sense, the word modernism refers to the belief, supposedly characteristic of fully modern man, that all religion springs up irrationally from the subconscious of primitive and non-modernized men and has no basis in objective reality, end of quote.
Wow, that's a strong statement. All religion springs up irrationally from the subconscious of primitive and...
Well, you remember we spent quite a bit of time talking about modernism, and modernism is a sort of a religion of the heart, sort of a religion of the will rather than the mind or the intellect.
Not based on objectivity or reality on the outside?
That's correct, yes. Okay. Which, of course, is a reflection of some of the philosophers like Immanuel Kant and some of those that we spent quite a bit of time on, and Protestant theologians like Schleiermacher and Reichel and Strauss, that we also placed quite a bit of emphasis on in some of our earlier sessions. Well, then Father McCarthy identifies some of the special characteristics of modernist belief as listed by Pope Pius X's famous encyclical Pascendi Dominici Gregis.
Now, this is where the Pope pointed out how modernism did not fit in with Catholic doctrine.
Yes, and he called it modernism a synthesis of all heresies.
Okay.
This was issued back in 1907, and it was condemning the ideas of people like Father Torrell and Father Loisy and others, not by name, but by implication. And it wasn't, neither one of those priests accepted that encyclical, nor would they take the oath that was required to be faithful to Catholic doctrine and this, that, and the other that came up afterwards. And both of them ended up being excommunicated just within a year or two after the encyclical had been issued. But Father McCarthy identifies some of the main beliefs of the modernist, and so I'll go into those. One is belief in the ongoing reform of the church. He says that modernists, lacking the firm protection of scholastic philosophy and theology, vaunt themselves as ongoing reformers of the church. This would be number two, Pascendi, that the Pope identifies, you know, some of the beliefs. And basically anathemizes them.
For saying that.
Yes, for saying
that.
In other
words, that the church keeps changing.
Yes.
And it's basic doctrine.
And by anathemize, you mean condemning these ideas.
Yeah.
Another one, belief that faith is merely a feeling. Remember, we really emphasize this very heavily, that modernists hold that the existence of God is not knowable to modern scientific man. So, hence they say faith is merely a subjective feeling that arises from the subconsciousness of men, from which also arises what is called the divine revelation. And this would be number seven that Pope Pius X identified.
Okay, so divine revelation is not what we call it, coming from God to man from the outside.
No.
It's coming from the inside of man, from the subconscious.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
It's sort of a collective conscience.
Okay.
You see, that talk gets real fuzzy. It gets very fluffy, that kind of thing. It's mystical in a way.
Okay.
And if mysticism is not tied into doctrine, if mysticism, which, you know, emphasizes the will and the heart and emotions and
which
intuition,
is fine.
Which is fine, of course, especially when you're talking about the mysticism of, let's say, a St. Teresa of Avila or St. John of the Cross. But people like that highly respected theology as well, and tying in the mysticism. You see, the mystics, it's awfully easy to skip the intellect and divine revelation and go right directly to a direct contact with God. And there is some of that, of course, with mystics. But they're not, they don't get any new revelation. They don't get any new new knowledge that's necessary for our salvation. That all closed, of course, with the last apostle.
Well, and the great mystic, as you were saying, Ron, Teresa of Avila, when she was dying, say, I die a daughter of the church.
Sure.
I've built my life on the doctrines of the church. Okay.
Well, and she had a great appreciation for theologians and, you know, highly educated men and women in theology and philosophy and things like that. In fact, she always tried to get for her sisters, you know, because she was a mother general of a certain branch of the Carmelite religious group, of which she had helped reform back in the 17th century. And she always tried to get priests who were not only very holy men, very virtuous men, to be the spiritual directors and confessors to her nuns, but also at the same time, very knowledgeable men. Because she thought of a priest, even though he might be holy, if he's not real knowledgeable, he could still be harmful. And so she said...
You stressed that quite a bit.
Yeah. Oh, yes, because she always said in her own life she had been kind of led astray at various times. In other words, given not good advice sometimes.
And from people who didn't really understand her mystical experiences, but she was grounded firmly in the teachings and doctrines and dogmas of the church.
But going back to the modernists believe that that each individual would have a kind of an intuition, and so God sort of, I guess, they were kind of fuzzy about it, inspired individuals to know certain things. Again, they were always very fuzzy about what these things were.
Right.
I think that's one of the reasons, to the extent that a lot of modern theology and a lot of modern sermons and things like that are very fluffy, very fuzzy, because of this aspect of modernism. There are other aspects too, I think, why it's fuzzy and fluffy, and one of the reasons is I think that a lot of modern priests don't want to offend people. They don't want to offend people who live in a society that become very secular and materialistic and hedonistic, and they're afraid they might drive them away from church if they preach the gospel, if they really, especially if they deal with matters of moral issues.
Right and wrong.
Right and wrong.
Particularly sexual morality.
Yeah, oh, particularly, yes. And a lot of modern people don't want to hear that because they've been infected with the, you know, the secular
culture.
Yeah.
And we breathe it. Well, I liked your statement there. It was very clear, Ron, and I really missed it. Faith is merely a feeling, according to the modernist.
Yes.
There is feeling in our relationship with God, as important as the mystics say, but when faith is reduced to just a feeling, boy, we're in trouble. We're into personal interpretation. We're kind of our own infallible authority.
Yeah, they talk about this collective conscience or consciousness. And again, that's very fuzzy, how doctrine evolves out of this collective consciousness. To me, that's all a bunch of nonsense. That's all a bunch of fluffy, you know, by fluffy I mean, or it has no substance.
Okay.
You know, it's like snow. Snow piles up. You know, we use the term snow job when we say we're, kind of faking it or trying to make people think we know more than we do. So whether it's writing on a test, a student or whatever, and I always tell my students, they say, well, how much should I write? And I say, well, stop writing when you feel the snow starts to fall. And which it just simply means, you know, it's getting fluffy.
Yeah.
And you know how it is with snow. There's only about 1 inch of water for about every 12 inches of snow. So by the time it all melts down, there's not a whole lot of substance to it.
That's a good statement. Well, go ahead with Pius the X's disagreement with the modernist teachings. One, ongoing reform of the church, things keep changing, the teachings, and then faith is merely a feeling. Anything else?
Well, belief in the evolution of dogma or doctrine. Modernists believe that everything that is said about Jesus in the Gospels that is suggestive of the divine or of the supernatural is to be deleted, and that what the church calls dogmas or doctrines are subject to ongoing change or evolution. Since their purpose is only to enable the believer to give an account of his faith to himself. They certainly picked up this idea of evolution originally, of course, from Darwin, and then, of course, others like Huxley and others that picked it up and applied it to other areas other than biology.
So Herbert the word Spencer, dogma, really, for the modernists, was, in the way the church uses it, as a clearly defined doctrine like Jesus is truly God and man. And that's a dogma the church is not going to change. We can understand it more deeply, but we certainly, it's not going to change that Jesus is truly God and truly man, or that Jesus is truly present in the Eucharist.
Related to that one, Father McCarthy lists another one called Belief in the Laws of Evolution, and that's another set of points that Pius X had made in Pascendi 25, 26, and 27, and that's the belief in the laws of evolution, that modernists believe that everything in religion is subject to the laws of evolution, so that contemporary lived experiences of believers should be able to react against and change what is merely past and traditional in the church. Another one is belief in a certain divine reality. This would be Pascendi number 14. Modernists say that they believe in the existence of a divine reality that exists outside of the believer, but can be known only by the direct intuition of each individual believer. It does not pertain to any scientific knowledge. Another one is belief in that life is truth. This is Pascendi number 16. For the modernist, life and truth are one and the same thing, and what faith beliefs cannot conflict with what science knows, because the two are in different universes of discourse. This is what John Paul called the split, the Kantian split. It's the split between faith and reason. And we don't have time to go into that. Father McCarthy has a lengthy article on that subject about the Kantian split, and how Joseph Ratzinger, then Joseph Ratzinger, who now is our Pope, had commented very extensively on this split that between faith and reason that Kant really sort of caused. And you might recall John Paul II wrote a whole book. I can't recall if it was an encyclical or not, The Fetus et Ratio, but at least it was a book that he wrote, where he again shows how and tries to bring the two back together philosophically and theologically and whatever.
And fides et ratio, meaning faith and reason.
Yes.
And that they're linked.
That they're linked, yes. And they can't conflict. They conflict with each other. Father McCarthy goes on, they say, the modernists say, that religious formulas are subject to the scrutiny of science and of philosophy and must conform themselves to what science knows, instead of the other way around. The belief that God is immanent, this was very, very important, that God is only internal in man. Sometimes this is called vital immanence. I think this is what Pius X called it, if I recall right.
Are you saying Bible or vital?
Vital. Vital immanence. Immanent meaning, of course, that God is only within man. And modernists maintain that dogmas of the church are only symbolic representation of a God who does not fully exist outside of the believer, and that sacred scriptures are just a collection of past subjective experiences that are to be lived over again by contemporary believers in their own way. This is just, actually three of Pascendi, 20, 21, and 22. Belief in historical criticism, this method we've been talking about this whole series. A belief that this method is a logical conclusion based upon modernist principles, such as that there have been no real interventions of God in human history, and that the Jesus of history has been elevated, embellished by Christian believers to the Christ of faith. We spent a lot of time on that subject, so you know we don't think we need to comment on it right now. But a Christ of faith in keeping with the needs that these believers felt for a supernaturalized founder. Another belief is in the evolution of the Bible, another modernist belief. Modernists affirm that the books of the Bible, and especially the Pentateuch, which of course is the first five books of the Bible, and the first three Gospels, that is the Synoptic Gospels, were gradually formed by additions to a primitive brief narration as effects of, quote, a vital evolution springing from and corresponding with the evolution of faith, end of quote. Another one, a rejection of scholastic philosophy. This is one of the things that, of course, that the modernists did. They rejected the philosophy of St. Thomas Aquinas and all those scholastic philosophers from his time onward. And I might add, too, that the theologians and scripture scholars of the Nouveau Theology tended to do that, too, to some extent. De Lubac and Fumbaltazer and even our own present-day Pope, Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger, now, of course, Benedict XVI, never really did care too much for scholastic, at least neo-scholastic philosophy. We won't talk about that now because we're going to do a series on that kind of thing. So I don't want to get into the details of that now.
Sure. But the Pope, Benedict XVI, has certainly come out repeatedly clarifying that the Christ of faith and the Jesus of history are the same person.
And the thing is, Benedict is more of an Augustinian than he is a Thomist.
Okay.
Now, John Paul, on the other hand, was probably more of a Thomist than he was an Augustinian. And as I said, we won't try to clarify what that means right now, but it's sometime in another series we'll do that. Modernists maintain that scholastic philosophy is to be thrown out as an obsolete system of thought, and that the dogmas of the church are to be harmonized with science and history, and that the number of external devotions is to be reduced. This would be Pius X's Pascendi number 38. He's just sort of skipping down through them. Another one, they also maintain that the fathers of the church were entirely ignorant of history and criticism, for which they are only excusable on account of the time in which they live. The modernists tended to completely throw out the biblical interpretations and the theology of the early church fathers, including the doctors of the church. This would be people like, you know, St. Jerome, St. Irenaeus, St. Justin Martyr, St. Origen, Origen, Tertullian, who was also not canonized for various reasons, and then even on down to, you know, the time of St. Thomas Aquinas, one of the great doctors, and St. Bonaventure, 13th century, and St. Bonaventure.
We'll talk about that poison atmosphere. I think that's critical.
Well, Pius X was also saddened, according to Father McCarthy, at the sight of, and I'll quote this, is a quote from his encyclical, so many other Catholics who, while they certainly do not go so far as the former, have yet grown into the habit as though they had been breathing a poisoned atmosphere of thinking and speaking and writing with a liberty that ill becomes Catholics. In other words, he's talking about modernist scripture scholars and theologians. And he has people like Loisy and Tyrell in mind. Mm-hmm. And others as well. Going back to the quote now, if they treat biblical questions, it is upon modernist principles. If they write history, it is to search out with curiosity and to publish openly on the pretext of telling the whole world, and with a species of ill-concealed satisfaction, everything that looks to them like a stain on the history of the church, end of quote. That's actually quoted from Pascendi number 43.
Okay. Well, since our time's running down, how do these characteristics of modernism compare with the new modernists or the neo-modernists today?
Well, a lot of these things certainly carried over, I think, with the so-called new modernism or the neo-modernism. And when we get into another series, we'll explain that more carefully and more clearly, more in more detail. One thing I didn't say a while ago, though, when we were talking about the fathers of the church, the modernists rejected the fathers of the church. But on the other hand, those in the new theology are just the opposite.
Mm.
They wanted to go back to the fathers of the church.
The very early writers.
The early writers in the church, and the early theologians, the early scripture scholars, because they thought they had a vast amount of wisdom and knowledge that we should recapture, so to speak.
Which was a good thing.
Which was a good thing. And they also wanted to go back more and more to scripture. And one of the reasons that the Catholic Church did go back more to scripture and to the churches, the church fathers, was because of the influence of these new theologians on Vatican Council II. You'll see a big difference when you read Vatican documents before the council and after the council. For example, if you look at the new catechism, you'll see that the new catechism, all 870 pages of it, is absolutely full of quotes from the church fathers and from scripture.
Amazing.
Far more so, I think you would find if you went back and looked at the Roman catechism. The catechism
after the Council of Trent.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, I mean, they did do a lot of quoting, and there was a lot of, but I'd say maybe only one-tenth, maybe, or one-fifth. So there was a lot more emphasis. Now, one of the things that, and you might recall, this was called by the new theologians in French, ressourcement, going back to the sources again. So that's one of the things that the new theologians are just completely different as far as modernism is concerned.
In return to the early church fathers, first three or four centuries, and particularly the scriptures themselves.
Oh, there's a lot of things we could say quickly. I know our time's running out here. We went down through about 10 or so of those points that Father McCarthy made, that Pius X had made, of course, in Pascendi, belief in the ongoing reform of the church. If we had time, we could go through every one of those and show how the neo-modernist, or the modern modernist, since Vatican Council II, has basically incorporated a lot of these same ideas into their own thinking, in their own theology, and their own biblical scholarship.
Now, how do you separate the modernists of Pius X's Pascendi from the new modernists?
Well, that's a hard one. That's been... there's some who will say that there's no connection between Loisy, let's say, and Tyrell, and let's say Hans Küng or Edward Schielebeeks, or some of the modern, the more extreme types of those who've been censored by the church in some way or another, Father Charles Curran or and several others
from Catholic University.
Yeah, Catholic. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of them that probably should have been censored that hasn't been. But some would say there's no connection. But I think if we really had time, we could take these beliefs here that Father McCarthy listed for us that come from Pascendi, and a lot of them would very much apply to a lot of these modern theologians and scripture scholars.
Thanks for a wonderful presentation, but our time has run out according to our timekeeper. So to our listening audience, may God bless you all, always, and in all ways.